From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of June 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. I'll update you on the agricultural news for the day. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue convening a big meeting in the Witten Building today with many of the cabinet secretaries from President Trump's administration. We'll hear all about that. And then we'll take a look at what cattle producers can do as it relates to dry season conditions and getting themselves prepped for them if this happens to be a hot and dry summer. That all happens right here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. And oh, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too with Mike Tenora from T-Storm in Chicago. Check us out online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday afternoon, the 15th day of June. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Well, it's been kind of an interesting week. We've had rain in the forecast, out of the forecast. The markets have moved higher. They've moved lower. And today, I'll call them steady to better. How about that? What do you see?
Well, I'd say today's temporarily, anyway, it's a moral victory for the bulls. Started off sharply lower and were able to climb their way back higher. Basically, wheat was the leader. That's the one that's got the most probably weather stress under it. The spring wheat crop, the western corn belt seems to be more in a default mode of being probably more on the hot and dry side, where the maybe the eastern corn belt is not so much so. So, but for the week, wheat is basically right up against its highs. So, depending upon what I guess the weather forecast is tomorrow morning, wheat has a chance of closing higher for the week. Beans, with today's advance, at least brought them within striking distance of a possible higher close. We're still down for the week, but I think we're only maybe down a nickel or 6 cents or something like that. And that's nothing in the bean trade and this type of environment. But corn, it would have to have a big up day tomorrow to kind of pull its way back toward unchanged or higher for the week. So just kind of looking at the charts, it kind of says that this rain that we had over the last couple of days, and then maybe what's in the forecast here over the next couple of days, may have at least given the corn crop enough moisture not to worry about it. And we'll just kind of take 1 week at a time. And I think probably what the trade will watch closely will be Monday's crop rating levels to see if there's any changes up or down. You know, without the rain, it was clear that we was probably going to go down after last weekend. But now that the rain has come in many areas, I haven't talked to a lot of people, but I know it's been quite uneven throughout the Corn Belt. But we'll see what the next 2 days bring, if it kind of fills in the areas that kind of got in on the light side or missed it all together. And then we'll kind of trade that probably Monday morning. But, you know, technically, I think when I talked to you last week, corn had made the clear breakout of the sideways range and even stretched a little bit more above it. I think I mentioned to you that a lot of times when markets break out of a technical pattern, they'll fall back to the point of breakout. Well, that's what we did in corn. And then today we kind of flushed everything out. 96 was kind of good support until we came in here this morning, and we, I think, flushed it down, went down into 88 or something like that as a low. But we were able to come back and we're closed above 96. So corn is still technically in a position to kind of stair step up. But like I've told several farmers, is that we got to keep in mind the large supplies that we have around this year. And the trade is going to probably want more evidence, more fact-based evidence, what size of crop we actually have, if this market is ever going to maybe take off to the upside. And we really don't start getting into facts until we see what the June 30th acres report is. What's the acres? Did we lose acres? Did we gain acres? And whatever kind of mix that is. And then August, I know I've heard a lot of people complain about maybe the stands ain't very good and blah, this and this and that. Well, maybe that August crop report is going to tell us something on plant populations. That will be a fact. But we're not going to get any measurable yield estimates until we get into September. And this might be one of these years that the market really doesn't, it chops around, wants to maybe go higher because of the weather pattern, maybe won't go higher until the combines start rolling. So we'll have to kind of take 1 week at a time. But it does, at least so far up through mid-June here, we haven't had a real favorable growing pattern. And it does look like it's dinging up crop prospects, some more so than others, but that's probably kind of where we're at, I think, Todd.
Yeah, 1 week at a time on the old crop corn sounds to me as if you might want in anything that's left yet to sell a bid in already and make it a moderate bid as opposed to something a little higher than that.
Well, yeah, depending upon how much you have around and whether or not it has to be sold by a certain date. You know, those are all factors that kind of go into your decision. But, you know, last week's run-up did offer farmers to sell a significant portion of remaining inventories during price strength. And that is usually bullish. Now, if they have to sell it, you know, when the market is sinking, that just really, you know, is a bearish situation. But at least the farmers were able to at least let loose of some of their old crop inventory on price strength. And if, you know, we get another push up due to maybe the rains ain't as good as what they thought this weekend, or we come in Monday morning and the weather forecast is, you know, we're going to build up a big high pressure system moving across the Midwest. And then we get another spike up in prices. Well, then that's another opportunity to kind of, you know, peel out of your old crop inventory. Depending upon what your crop looks like, I suppose, out in the field. I think if I was raising corn, but I'm not raising corn, and I know there's a lot of financial risk and a lot of stress, but, you know, if you get a good yield, you know, cash corn prices up against $4 is probably not a bad place to let something go, but we'll just have to take, you know, like I said, 1 week at a time and see how this thing plays out.
How about your $9 beans?
Well, I'm probably more bullish to beans than I am corn. Just looking at what I see around my home area here in Illinois, I guess I would be more apt to buy soybeans than I would corn. Corn, I think, went through the weekend pretty good. Beans probably not so good. And beans, we still have a good demand base under beans. We still do on corn also. But beans is a month of August, and we'll see what kind of weather pattern there is. But the thing I like about beans is there's actually nobody bullish beans. Maybe they turned a little bullish here over the past week or two, but beans have been such the bearish story of the year. So I think somewhere along the line, all those shorts are going to get their clock cleaned. But I may have to be a little patient on that. But I do like the way the beans closed today. And if we could get some follow through and pull out a higher weekly finish in beans, I think you'll see some technical buying come into the bean market that might surprise a lot of people.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very well.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, many of the president's cabinet secretaries were in the Witten Building, the home of the United States Department of Agriculture, this morning. That for a special task force on rural prosperity that has now begun its work. Gary Crawford from USDA has more.
We're here this morning to develop a plan for rural prosperity.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue at the USDA in Washington Thursday, hosting the first meeting of the President's Interagency Task Force on Agriculture and Rural Prosperity. Besides USDA people, there were top officials from over 20 other government departments and agencies, and of the several approaches and barriers to rural prosperity, this issue kept coming up over and over.
Excessive and burdensome and unproductive regulation.
The regulatory side.
Overregulation.
The regulatory program.
Regulatory reform.
Better regulation.
And so it went. After the meeting, Secretary Perdue telling reporters,
I was extremely pleased with the participation overall today from all the various agencies, and it's pretty amazing to me that they came prepared to understand, to roll up our sleeves and go to work.
And Thursday afternoon, the various working groups in the task force began doing just that. Perdue said the president wants by October 22nd a working plan to revitalize rural economies, including the farm economy. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Elsewhere in Washington, D.C. today, the Senate Ag Committee will hold what appears to be its first D.C.-based hearing on the 2018 Farm Bill, and the focus will be agricultural research. Farmers, commodity groups, environmentalists, and agribusiness agree that USDA-backed research is key to the future of agriculture, but it's often an area that gets backburnered in the scramble to fund other Farm Bill priorities. Ag research pays off in so many different ways, but you have so many tangible needs that pop up, says Senate Agriculture Chairman Pat Roberts, pointing to recent wildfires in the Great Plains, low commodity prices, and trade issues as examples. While federal funding for ag research, much of which comes from the Farm Bill, has flatlined over the last several years at less than $3 billion, other countries are increasing their spending. China, in particular, has upped its investments in agricultural research and is now spending 6% more on farm studies than the U.S. The funding plateau in the United States has groups worried that domestic researchers will not be able to help farmers grow more crops on less land while experiencing climate, water, and weather concerns. And finally today, this note on the tragedy in Alexandria, Virginia, that touches Illinois and agriculture in so many ways. At bat when the shots were fired during the Republican practice was Illinois Representative Rodney Davis. He is fine. As we all know, Steve Scalise, the majority whip, was fired upon and injured seriously when the bullet pierced his hip. Also fired upon and hit several times in the chest was Matt, and you'll have to forgive me, I don't know how to pronounce the last name. It's either Mika or Micah, who is Tyson Foods Director of Governmental Relations. He was in the ICU at George Washington University Hospital following surgery. He's a lobbyist and well-regarded in the food and agricultural policy circles. He played baseball in college and is dedicated to the congressional GOP team, helping it prepare for today's charity game with the Democratic Nine. And that's a look at today's Ag News. You know, summer's about to arrive, and it looks like it might be a dry one. I've got some tips for beef cattle producers thinking about how to handle grazing and feed needs. Well, the rains are coming now in fits and starts. Most are bracing for hot, dry summer, though it hasn't come to that, at least yet. Travis Mateer says beef cattle producers need to think ahead and begin to plan how to manage their pastures and their feed needs. The first item on the list is not to leave the herd on any one pasture for too long.
The best thing that producers can do is definitely speed that rotation up, not hit those pastures so hard in the ground, because remember, what's above ground is very reflective of that root base. And so if we continue to take off more up top, we're really taxing the root base down below. And so less and less roots means less and less capability to reach down and grab moisture from our subsoil layers. So we do not want to overgraze. We want to move quickly, keep that residual growth there on top, which would be reflective of maintaining that root base.
That's step one in the dry season prep process, says the University of Illinois beef cattle specialist. Step two, says Mateer, is to lay in feed supplies.
I think right now you've got to look at dry feedstuffs because you're not sure what to do. So while there may be some local buys in terms of wet commodities, if you don't have the capabilities to feed those up in a timely manner, there could be some spoilage problems. So look at those dry feedstuffs, dry corn gluten feed, soybean hulls, maybe even corn if you got that. Some folks still have corn in the bin, right? So there's still opportunity to feed that corn if we do break into a spell of dry weather.
Mateer says this is especially true as the price of corn remains low and an attractive buy for livestock feeders. This is the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds at Windsor, Illinois, is now here to talk about the cash grain market. Hey, Matt, thanks for being on the air with us. What you up to this afternoon?
Well, yeah, I just got done certifying some acres. Figured I would do it before the deadline this year. So turning over a new leaf, they were a little surprised to see me there so early, that's for sure.
Yeah, made them happy. Don't forget to go in and certify your acres if that's what you need to do at the local FSA office. Now, tell me about the marketplace and how you see the cash grain situation this week.
Well, I mean, you know, the corn market was sure impressive today. You know, basically, traded over a dime off of its lows at one point. Had a nice settle a little bit higher on the day. It's nice to see that. I think that whenever I saw the wheat market rallying and then soybean market rallying back into the green, I kind of figured that the corn market would rally, but I didn't know that it would rally like it did. I think the amount of strength we saw today was sure a nice sign, especially coming off of a pretty active weather pattern here in the last 48 hours. So those of people that got the rain, I know, are feeling really good about this, and the people that didn't get the rain at least don't feel near as bad as what they did this morning with a corn down 6 cents.
So why do you think it managed to rally in the face of the rainfall overnight?
Well, first of all, the rain was a little bit spotty. You know, you talk to one guy and they had an inch, you talk to another guy or a gal and they had a tenth if they got anything. And so it's not like everyone received the rain. Yeah, there was a fair amount of rainfall depending on where you're at. I mean, I had 3 inches in my gauge this morning. I hate to say that, but I did. It was we were pretty lucky where we live. Everywhere that we farm, we got a decent rain. But a lot of folks that I deal with didn't get much rain. So I think that's part of it, first of all. Second of all, I just don't think the funds want to go into this time of year with a short position. They've shortened it up big time. It's not near as short as what it was. But I feel like they're worried about it because there's enough issues with this crop that they don't want to get into a situation where it's a panic situation buying out of their positions.
As Wicker told us to take it week by week, are you of that same mind?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to, as I always say, I want to have offers in place well in advance. I want to do my homework, and I want to know exactly what my situation is, because a lot of guys can sell corn at $4 to make money based on the board. Some guys can't, and so we don't want to get too wrapped up in what everyone else is doing, but pay attention to our own bottom line.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mike Tenora is here from T-Storm out of Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. I know we've had a little rainfall, but really, we want to know what you think will come next.
We're going to see more of the same over the next several days. There'll be a few thunderstorms in the Corn Belt today, tomorrow, Saturday, and even on Sunday. But as is often the case at this time of the year, it's very difficult to say exactly when and exactly where these thunderstorm clusters will occur. That's always a bit of a dicey situation for farmers and for the market in general, because as you noted, some areas saw some good rain over the last couple of days and some areas didn't. Those areas that didn't see rain are now in a situation where we need more rain. And even though there are chances here and there, it's a little bit tricky to say whether or not any given location is going to see a thunderstorm. Nonetheless, the main point here is that there will be thunderstorms in the Corn Belt over the next 3 to 4 days, and then it temporarily turns a little cooler.
Mike, these weather patterns remind me of August, not of June. Am I missing something in that categorization?
I think that's a fairly accurate description, simply because it's so warm. High temperatures in the 90s at this time of June are a little bit unusual. Normally, we'd be in the 70s and 80s, so it has been unusually warm. We've seen those humidity levels creep up, though interestingly, the humidity's crept up simply because of a southerly low-level wind flow. In August, a lot of the times we see real muggy conditions is because of all the evaporation of soil moisture, but we don't have a whole lot of soil moisture in place right now, so it's been more due to this persistent weather pattern where we're just feeding southerly winds across the central U.S. and pumping some of that humidity onto the north.
And so you suggested things would get cooler. Does that mean we go back to normals or we go back to something below normal?
We'll go below normal, but only for a few days. And the real question that a lot of people want to know the answer to is what will happen right after that cool period? Because we know it's going to start to warm up again, but more than likely what will happen is we'll turn much warmer for a day or two around Tuesday and Wednesday next week. That'll pop another thunderstorm cluster somewhere, so somebody else is going to see some more good rains come the middle of next week. Then after that, more of the same, maybe another thunderstorm cluster somewhere else, as that sharp dividing area between heat to the southwest and coolness to the northeast lingers. But no matter how the weather works out over the next 10 days, there's a number of signs that show it'll turn a lot warmer for the last 5 to 6 days of June. So by then, it'll probably be a lot warmer. It'll be even warmer than what we've been experiencing. But it's tricky to say, again, where these thunderstorms are going to occur. We know there'll be thunderstorms on the northern edge of where it's the warmest. We just can't say exactly how far north that warmth is going to go.
Will the rainfall alleviate the problems we've had across the Corn Belt?
Well, the real problem is that most areas had not received any rain for the month of June until the last 24 to 48 hours. So monthly rainfall deficits as of a couple days ago were huge. Most states needed 1.5 to 2.5 inches of rain to get back to normal. We did see some of that over the last couple of days, and we'll see a little bit more of that over the next several days. But in the end, you're still probably going to need to see more rain, especially if we start to see some of that warmer weather at the end of the month.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. I'm Todd Gleason.